All right, so I owe you two apologies. The first is I have not yet sent back Acts on the midterm, and I have not forgotten that I need to do that. I spent the weekend desperately trying to hack kernel code, and I made a decision that I was simply going to ignore absolutely everything else because I've been trying to do this for months and made no progress. And the reason was I kept being responsible. So, they are coming. And I should also explain that the reason I'm not really worrying about it is, frankly, I don't expect any problems in the midterms. And that may be unfair, because the fact that I don't expect problems doesn't mean that you're not worried. So maybe I should be a little more responsible. Okay. So that's my first apology. My second apology, the thing about babies, right, this, you know, the story, right, you have a child, I see somebody knows where this is going. And
you start
children,
that way, it doesn't matter which way it's going.
Doesn't matter where the story goes from here, you know it's going to be bad, yeah. So children, one of their critical jobs, right, is to be disease vectors, right? They basically run around from playground to, yeah, somebody has just stole this copy on their shoulder. They run around from playground to playground to playground propagating viruses, right? It's part of their job. And, you know, the usual rule is when you're a parent, you expect that your child is going to get you sick a certain number of times a year by bringing home something helpful from school. Well, an 11-month-old doesn't do that because they don't go to school yet. And last week, we decided that we were going to run this process in reverse. I came home with, you know, what for me was a mild flu. And the usual run is I come home with the flu, and a couple of days later, my wife gets it, you know, and that was the end of it because the dog doesn't get human flus. But the baby picks up this flu, maybe not yesterday, but the day before, starts sounding a little wheezy. And the thing is, this is deceptive because this baby has sounded a little wheezy from the time he was born, so we don't really catch on quite so quickly. By yesterday at 6 p.m., the baby's having a little trouble breathing. And by 8:30, we decided to take, no, not serious difficulty, just, you know, you can hear the wheezing is now serious, and there's a lot of fun, and basically like you feel when you feel like crap, because you've got a cold. So by 8:30, the wheezing was pretty serious, and not, you know, not anything threatening, but the thing is, I was listening to it, and I'm thinking, you always want to listen when you have a cold, not for how bad is it, but for what's the rate of change. So from 6 o'clock to 8:30, the breathing went from a little labored to a lot labored, and for that to happen in a 2.5-hour period, hey, look, we're new parents, we don't know what we're doing, look, we're going to go get the baby checked out, it's better to look stupid than to be wrong about this, off we go to patient first. And they were really good about it, and the answer basically is, babies get colds and there's nothing you can do about it. You can't give them decongestants, they don't work on babies this young, you know, you basically give them Tylenol. And the basic solution to this problem is you sit up all night, okay, holding the baby upright because that's the only position in which the baby can sleep. Now, of course, the catch is the baby sleeps in this position, but you do not!
You have kernel code.
Right? No. So my wife and I were both up essentially all night. I think we got between us about 4 hours of sleep. And if I'm a little disorganized today, this is why, and so this is my second long-winded apology.
Can I ask a question about something you said in Wednesday's lecture?
You can ask a question. Whether I'm competent to answer remains to be seen, but let's give it a try.
Let me see if I remember the question, how to phrase it correctly.
I feel much better now.
Every process has a brand, what was it called again?
Capability. It's just a capability slot. Brand is just a label that we attach for thinking convenience. There's nothing magic about this slot, and basically the trick to using it is you want to put into this slot a capability that you're not going to hand out for any other purpose, and since you're not going to hand it out, it can't be forged.
Right. So, the one thing that caught me is that you said it was essentially a write-only capability, that you don't read it, you use it to verify that somebody else is identical to you, or that somebody is identifying you yourself.
That's the higher level effect of the operation that you do, but that's not the low level operation. So the low level operation basically combines three capabilities. And there are a bunch of ways you could design this, but the way that it was done in the Kikos kernel and the Eros kernel is There's a capability called the process tool. The process tool has two jobs. One is, it's the thing that, given a bunch of nodes, lets you assemble them into a process that the system will acknowledge is a process. That operation is, in fact, not particularly sensitive. And in hindsight, I'm not sure we needed the process tool for that. And Charlie Landau and I have just agreed that process fabrication should actually just be done by the storage allocator. He's soon going to make that change in Kaparos, and we'll certainly do it in Kyotos. The other thing it does is the identify operation. And the arguments to the identify operation are, there are two variations, one for the process case and the other for the wrapper around a process case. But let me just do the process case, because the wrapper case is basically the same. So the two arguments are a process capability, or in fact, in Eros, a start or resume capability, which are variants of process capabilities. And a second capability that you hope, you believe, is the brand, the same capability as the capability that is in the brand slot of the process. Okay? And when I say the same, the kernel, of course, is entitled to make, you know, internal caching and representation changes in the way capabilities are stored, so we should understand the same to mean that they have exactly the same meaning. They may not be bitwise identical, because one of them may be transformed and the other may not, but we're going to ignore these transformations that are sort of internal private transformations. Now, either the brand that you hand in matches the brand in the process, or it does not. It's an EQ comparison. It's a pointer identity kind of a comparison. If it matches, then in the Eros and Kikos design, you'll get back a node capability. But in fact, really what you're looking for, the vast, unless you're tearing down the process, which is where you actually need the node capability in Eros and Kikos, in fact, you don't even care about this capability. In fact, overwhelmingly, commonly, the pattern is that you say, and I don't even want to receive that capability. What you're actually looking for is the result code, which says, okay, the operation succeeded, or no, the brand did not match. So
I guess what struck me is, if it's write only, then you could, in theory, have a rogue process that just continually writes over the brand capability, trying to forge itself as somebody else. And I mean, it can't read the other guy.
Hang on a second. So, two parts to that. One, can I overwrite my own brand slot? Answer, yes. Two, could I overwrite my brand slot in such a way that I would now appear to look like you? No. Because in order to do that, I would have to be in a position to fabricate the capability that was used for your brand. And by construction, we guaranteed that that's not going to be possible, because the party who put that brand in your process isn't giving it out, and it can't be read out of your process, so there's no way to get it.
Dumb luck.
There is no way to build it. You can't build it. You can't fabricate that capability at all. There's no such operation. This is not data. These are kernel-protected bits. Would it help for me to actually state what that capability actually is and how the real mechanism really works?
I think you just answer the question by saying that it was that they're kernel protected bits for me. So that you
it's a little more than that. Okay. Let me the story I'm about to tell you is not the one that's actually used in Eros, because Eros has another step called a process constructor that we've now agreed was probably unnecessary. So I'm gonna stick with the somewhat more simplified version. Okay. Right, there is a space bank. Let's imagine that process allocation happens with a space bank. Okay. Now, here's what we're going to do. For a given process type, right, we're going to have a distinguished space bank. In the actual Eros implementation, there was a process called a process creator, and the constructor for instances of the foo program, that constructor had a process creator that was unique to that constructor. In fact, you know what? Let me go through the real design. So forget this space. So this process creator is uniquely held. Okay? So the foo constructor has a capability in the process creator. Okay? What's in this capability? more generally in Eros, what's in the kind of capability that I use to send a message? Because capability, Eros does not have endpoints. Okay. Basically, what this capability says is, I am a start capability. That means the constructor can send a request to the process creator. I point to the process whose object ID is 10, which in this case is the process creator. This object ID is a kernel value. And every start capability in Eros has what in Kikos was called the key data field, and Eros is called the key info field. It's depending on the generation of the system, an 8-bit or a 16-bit field. It's data. Okay? And this tells us, when we invoke this capability, this info field gets extracted and gets delivered to the process creator. So this is how the process creator, or any other process, knows what interface is being invoked. Okay? And in the same way, if we move to an endpoint design, right, what we're going to see in this capability is exactly what we see here, except that it won't say I'm a start capability, it'll say I'm an endpoint capability. And this 10 will not be the identity of the process, it will be the identity of the endpoint on which the process is listed. We're just going to add a level of indirection. Eros didn't have that. So, what actually happens here is the client goes to the food constructor, and let me change terms here because client server is going to get us in trouble. The label that we used in Eros and Kikos for this was the requester. This is the party who is requesting the fabrication of the process. Goes to the constructor and says, make me a food! And the constructor says, never mind. Okay. You thought I wouldn't be able to resist it. So the food constructor says, in order to make a foo, I've got a bag of capabilities I'm going to install, but first I need a foo process. Okay. So it turns to the process creator, and this is the part of the protocol that I glossed over when I described this. And it says, make me a new process. Okay. And the process constructor fabricates a process that we can't really say yet is a foo process. This process doesn't have an address space yet. It's not executable. It's only a process in the sense that it's a data structure that if we populate it correctly will turn into a process. Okay? So this double arrow is meant to be, it fabricates this. And it gets the pieces from a space bank, which came in originally from the requester. And it replies to the food constructor with a process capability to this new process. That's what the food constructor is going to use to populate. Let me label that one. And the 127 is just a randomly selected object ID. There's no significance. Just, it better not match anything else. Also, when I've written the 10, I've left out here that there's also a version number associated with every capability. So when we destroy an object, we're going to bump its version number, and that lets us reuse the object, because if the version numbers don't match, the capability is no good. For this conversation, we're only interested in capabilities that are good, so I just don't want to write in confusing detail. It's already confusing enough. Now, about the brand slot. The one part of the process structure that the process creator does set is the brand slot. What's in that slot is a capability fabricated by the process creator. What capability is that? Well, it turns out we use a start capability. And the way we guarantee that nobody else will ever be able to fabricate this capability is we give it a distinguished info value. And I have a vague memory that I chose -1, which
Don't ask me why. Okay, now, the process creator does not ever give out that capability. That capability is the capability that it's going to use for the brand slot of every process that it creates, and it will not give out that capability. What does it take to fabricate that capability? Well, in order to fabricate that capability, you would have to hold a process capability to the process creator. Because that's what it takes to fabricate a start capability. Capability fabrication is a kernel operation. Not even the constructor holds that process capability. Okay, so I said there was this identifier sequence. So later, somebody else comes along let me finish the protocol. So now we have a properly branded process, and we're going to stick in its address-based capability in the other stop, and then we'll set it running. Now let me walk through how the identify mechanism really works, and then let me get to your question about possible ways that the contract could be violated. So later, somebody comes along and says, hey, is this a foo process? And they go to the constructor and they say, hey, did you fabricate this? And in the real implementation, not the glossed over simplified one, the constructor says, heck if I know, let me ask the process constructor. And it goes to the process constructor and says, did you make this thing? Well, the process constructor still has the brand, because that brand is unique to this process constructor. Right, and it runs the identify protocol to find out the answer. And the problem with this protocol is there are way too many steps in it. Okay. But you can see that as long as the process constructor doesn't screw up and give out this capability, there's no way that I could guess this brand from the outside. I don't have enough authority to fabricate this capability. Nobody does except the process constructor. And the process constructors in this system design are very close to ground in the trusted computing base. Now, what could go wrong? Once this process is running, it could reach back into its own process structure and say, I don't want to look like a foo anymore. I will clobber the brand slot with something else. Now, what have you accomplished when you do that? Well, you've accomplished the following. If anybody ever checks to find out who you are, you will not be able to give them any believable answer. But you will not be able to give them anybody else's answer either. So what you've just guaranteed is you cannot be authenticated credibly for anything ever again. So, assuming we're running the code we think we're running, this would be an action that would be very self-destructive. And in fact, if we're running a virus, right, this would also be self-destructive because the whole point of the virus is it wants to look like the real thing. It could do this, but it wouldn't. I mean, it would be counterproductive. Now, I did see the question, and I'm going to come back to it. I just want to finish the story. Sorry. So, but it is possible that after this program gets running, that it will switch its address space. So the guarantee of the brand is not what is the program now. The guarantee of the brand is at the time the program was created and set in motion, we know what code it was obeying, and whatever its state is now, good or bad, grew out of the actions that were undertaken and permitted by that code. That's the contract. Can I buffer over in this thing? Sure. You write crap code, we can buffer over in the program. Furthermore, later, if we discover that this version of the program was broken, we will later be able to say, and every program branded that way now must be viewed as suspicious. Because we know it was vulnerable. Okay, you've been patient, so let me take the question.
There is one process creator for each kind of process, right?
Every constructor has a different process creator that is unique to that constructor, And that process, in this case, is the foo constructor, so we could think of this as the foo process creator. And the foo process creator will be used to create all instances of the foo process.
Okay, so the brand is unique to a process creator. So two processes of different kinds cannot have brands to the same process creator, right?
The intent of the design is that two processes that are built by different constructors will never have the same brand.
Okay. Couldn't we merge the process creator and the constructor into one?
We could. We could merge the process creator and the constructor, and in fact, for a number of years, I thought that was a good idea. The rationale for not doing it in Kikos, and I talked to Norm Hardy about this and asked him why this wasn't done, and the answer was in two parts. First, you can make a clear architectural separation between the function of assembling a process and sticking its pieces together, and the constructor already has enough work to do. Second, he argued, hey, you might want to be able to fabricate a process without using a constructor. And in this system, you can go to the constructor of process creators, and you can get yourself a bare process creator, and you can do anything you want with it. There's no requirement that you use the constructor mechanism at all. If you don't, there's no requirement that I believe anything about your process. Right? But in this view, the architecture shouldn't constrain you to using the safe mechanism. Right? The contract is not that you have to be safe. The contract is that I can check. Now, in fact, the other place you could merge this, right? Let me just finish out the picture, is there's a space bank, right? And when the request message came in, it came in with the capability to that bank. And where did the process constructor get the pieces for the foo process? Well, this message from the constructor to bank forwarded the space bank, okay? The process constructor is the one who actually said, is this a real space bank? Because if it's not, then the brand could get leaked, okay? And provided it was a real space bank, it went and bought however many nodes were needed, assembled them into the right configuration, took the process tool, converted into a, sorry, stuck the brand in the slot, took the process tool, converted this thing into a process, handed the process capability back to the constructor. Whoops. Turns out the process, okay, I did the protocol wrong. It turns out the, yes. Takes the process capability, hands it back to the constructor. Constructor populates the process, and then through a slightly non-obvious and convoluted protocol, this process ends up replying to the requester.
The constructor gives the process a capability to the space bank, right?
Yes.
Constructor does that, not, sorry, the foo constructor does that, not the PC.
That's correct. The only job of the process creator is to get the process fabricated with the right brand. It doesn't do any other part of the assembly. It does the space bank validity test. Okay. Now, if you were going to look for something to merge, there are two ways you could go. One is you could merge the process creator into the foo constructor. Okay. And there would really be no harm in that. The protocol is pretty simple. And I'll draw you a picture in a minute that would actually argue that that might make sense, because there's a reductio problem in this design. The other thing is, you say, well, let's just take the functionality of the process constructor and just move it into the space bank. I mean, basically, we're allocating storage. And there's no reason, the space bank is already in a position to do all of the necessary steps here. The reason that was not done is, it turns out you want the process constructor to do just a little bit of initialization. So for example, in the case of the Pentium, you want to know that that process comes into the world with its segment selectors properly nullified. So mostly it has to know how to zero out all the registers. But it turns out that zeroing out all the registers is an architecture-dependent operation. And we were trying, Kikos folks were trying to keep the architecture issues out of the space bank, which also was already complicated enough. Now, subsequently, it turns out that that wasn't terribly compelling, and Charlie and I have sort of convinced ourselves that we should just move it into the space bank. So yes, your instinct that there are too many steps here, I agree with, and there are a couple of solutions. And we're not going with the one that you pointed at, but we're going with one that has similar effect. Let me explain actually why I think that that is a useful thing to do. What's the chain of trust? Well, I have a mystery process. I think it might be a foo. Okay? And, by the way, the thing that I'm drawing now, right, is a tree that describes who created who. It's not a tree necessarily describing communication. The problem is we're running out of arrows, so I need to make it clear which diagram I'm doing. So what I want to know, is this mystery process a foo process? I got to ask the foo constructor. And the foo constructor is going to ask the foo process creator. Well, that's all fine, except what about the foo constructor? How do I know that's a constructor? If I don't know it's a constructor, I don't have any reason to trust its answer. And the answer is, well, there is a constructor constructor. That's so painful to pronounce that we call it the meta constructor. By the way, that's as far out as it stopped, right? We didn't do the hyper constructor or the double monkey constructor or the left elbow constructor. That, you know, when the Lisp machines were done, there was this running gag, right? That in Lisp Emacs, you could do anything if only you could type with both hands, both elbows, and your nose at the same time, right? Oh, just use the control meta hyper double monkey left elbow A option, right? Okay. Now, this constructor, that's as far up as it gets. That is primordial. It's a process that comes into the world by magic. And if you don't have a capability to that, you're not able to engage in the validation protocol. And the reason you know you have a capability to that is the mechanisms that are used to fabricate accounts initially ensure it, and those mechanisms cannot be replaced by the administrator. Short of disk forensics. Okay.
Yeah. Every process has a capability that constructor constructs?
Yes, but what they have is not, well, in fact, yes, there's no reason for them not to have it. This is part of the system TCD. What could I do with that capability? I can identify constructors, and I can fabricate new empty constructors that I could then populate. Right. Now, in fact, it's probably a good idea, and I don't remember what was done, to have two different kinds of requester capabilities to a constructor, one that lets me build things, and the other that just lets me identify things. But that's a small, even if I let you build new constructors, it's really not a big deal. What can you do? Chew up your storage. It's yours anyway. Okay. Now, of course, this assumes that the process creator, is in fact a process creator. So where do those come from? Remember when you were really little and you asked where certain things came from? It's like that. Okay. You're thinking cartoons, aren't you, Scott? There is a process creator. Now this thing is also in the primordial system set. Okay. So every process creator in the world is fabricated by PCC, the process creator, in the same way that every constructor in the world is fabricated by the meta constructor. Okay. And the meta constructor has incestuous knowledge of PCC. This is established at system fabrication time. There's actually a phase where we have an initial set of system processes in the system, but it's as though you were running a linker and they get linked together, except that they're being linked in the sense that capabilities are connecting them, not that addresses are getting resolved. Okay? And in fact, this constructor immediately goes to PCC very early when the system is booted the first time and says, let me fabricate a new process creator, which is going to be the one that I'm going to use to build constructors. Now, there are two reductio problems in here. And I'm ignoring the space bank issue, which is so close to the ground that we probably can't resolve that reductio. So I've said, how do you know that a foo constructor is a constructor? But in a perverse sort of sense, we would like it to be the case that the metaconstructor is also considered a constructor. And the metaconstructor obviously cannot fabricate itself. That would be at best awkward. Okay. So the metaconstructor, right, is a constructor by special dispensation. It actually does whack its own brand slot with the constructor brand. Right. And this is trusted code, way down deep in the system. Actually, it doesn't whack its slot. It's prefabricated with that. You with me so far? I'm seeing a puzzled look here. So let me pause here before
why
I
does it do that?
Why does it do that? Because otherwise, if you held the metaconstructor in one hand and you went to the metaconstructor and you said, is this first thing actually a constructor? The metaconstructor couldn't identify it. So the metaconstructor, if you hold two capabilities from the metaconstructor, you go to one of them and say, is this other one a constructor? And the answer will be yes. This is where the reductio stops by magic, by prior construction. You with me so far? Okay. Now, the setup here is, the way I know it's a foo is I ask the foo constructor. So how do I know it's a process creator? There isn't a process creator constructor. And this is a place where Eros and Kikos differ. Okay. So in Eros, we relabeled the second scene in PCC as process creator constructor. That is also considered a constructor by primordial dispensation. So there is a small set of initial processes in the system. The metaconstructor, the process creator creator, and the space and the prime space entity that have some incestuous relationship and sort of initial connectivity in the graph that we can't explain as having emerged out of capability calls. And that's something like this, down close to ground, you're going to get a dependency problem that you can't resolve within the story. It's there in the initial state of the world. So the security argument for a system like this says, well, I start from an initial state and I do a bunch of safety-preserving transforms, one hopes. It turns out, showing that the safety-preserving transforms are in fact safety-preserving is actually not all that hard. I mean, not all that hard. 4 or 5 years of work for a good team of experts, but it's well tracking. Okay. The problem that's actually hard is showing that the initial configuration was actually safe. That's the piece that's really tough. And in fact, one of the critiques that was levied at this design by Mark Schaefer was that he was never convinced that the Kikos guys had successfully shown that their initial configuration was safe. Now, Mark was writing in haste. He was making a comment in passing as he was talking about the common criteria process and the TCSec process. But let me say, I think Mark's comment is a little pissy. Okay. He's absolutely correct. There's a problem here that needs to be addressed, but what he's kind of glossing over in this problem is that however bad validating that may be, that initial state is an order of magnitude less complicated than the initial state in the Unix system. Okay, so it's not like we get to duck this problem. We only get to negotiate about how big we want to make it. Is there a problem validating the Kikos initial state? Yes, I absolutely agree. There's a problem, and the argument was not satisfactorily completed in my mind. Is there also that problem in the Unix system? Unquestionably. In fact, in the Unix system, I would say the problem is harder. The reason I would say the problem is harder is, if you think about how a Unix system powers up, the first process that gets run is init. Look, I can take you through the linear path of the kernel code. And there's sort of an isolation boundary between the kernel code and the application code, and you can show, with enough work, the kernel will get the system configured. I don't want to trivialize this, this is a lot of work. But the kernel will get the system configured, it will get the first process running, and after that, the protocol is process calls the kernel, and kernel executes the service, and the service is either right or it's wrong. But in Unix, that first process is init, and that process runs with all the authority there is.
And if you actually look and follow the bouncing ball carefully in the Unix bootstrap, you'll see that there's a progression in which init progressively starts a couple of other processes. And these other processes progressively try to downgrade their authority as they're starting up system daemons. Right? And they do this by changing their user identity. And by incrementally giving up the authority that they started with. Now, the one thing I can promise you is arguing that you gave up authority correctly is really bloody hard. You're much happier if you can argue that you never had it in the first place. And that initial system graph that's actually built by essentially a system linker in the Euros code tree builds an initial system graph in which the authority will not then be downgraded. You do have to show that it, you know, that it stays where you put it, that it doesn't get transferred inadvertently. But it's a much better factored picture to attempt to do the analysis on. Okay, that got to be rather a long-winded answer to that question. It has nothing to do with what I want to do today, but I'm glad we did it, because this issue of how do you bootstrap security is actually one of maybe the hardest issues. There are kind of two really hard issues on assurance systems, right? One is the system correct? The other is how the hell do you bootstrap it? And my current opinion is actually the bootstrapping argument is harder. Because the bootstrapping argument is the one where you have to successfully argue that, you know, the process powered up, processor powered up with as much authority as there's ever going to be. Right? And you went through 15 million boot ROMs provided by bozos who don't know what they're doing and won't tell you what they did. Right? Then you're going to load the kernel in a state where the system state is completely unknown. And now you're going to try to downgrade that authority successfully. The only saving grace here is if you make it into the kernel and you subsequently replace all the drivers, you actually can undo all the crap that these people did. But, you know, if I were doing nuclear secrets, this argument for why the system is safe would not make me hugely happy. And I would probably solve that by going to something like Linux BIOS, where I really knew what was in the BIOS. So, go ahead.
Init is also one of those things that an administrator can't change, it's there by magic. This forensics.
Not only is init there, well, yes and no. Okay, different versions of Unix have done this in different ways. My memory of sort of the later generation Unixes is what happens is that the kernel essentially hand fabricates a temporary process that actually has no identity involved. And this process effectively performs an exec of /sbin/init. That's my memory of how this currently works. And so the implication of that is, hey, in principle, if you were a little careful about it, and in fact, you don't even have to be a lot careful, you could replace sbin init, and the next time the system booted up, you'd get a different init. And there's no disk forensics required to do that. It's there in the file system to be modified. Right? The reason you can't replace this part of the protocol in Eros easily is not in any file system. Right? The system is persistent. It doesn't have to leave state lying around in the file system for you to trample on. Or depending on your point of view, for you to be able to manipulate and alter or fix. And here's the catch, right? In most systems, we assume that the administrator is implicitly trusted. And there are certain things that we more or less have to trust the administrator to do, right? Somebody's got to create the accounts. Right? That person's the administrator. Please get this away from the microphone. Somebody's got to delete people from the system. Somebody's got to decide who gets to use how much storage. We might as well label that person the administrator. But here's the challenge question. Is there any intrinsic reason why the administrator should be able to look over your shoulder? They give you a certain amount of storage, they set up your account. There's absolutely no reason why that should intrinsically mean that they can examine what's going on in your account. The ability to allocate resource is an orthogonal permission from the ability to access the resource that then gets allocated. Those things can be separate. Again, ignoring disk forensics. Now, what do you gain, what do you lose? You can no longer go to the administrator for help. On the other hand, the administrator can can no longer turn your kitty porn collection over to the FBI. And personally, I'm not a big fan of kitty porn, but there are other things I can imagine that I might not want my administrator handing over to the FBI. And if I'm working in a sensitive environment, there may be things that my administrator is not cleared to see. So my model for should I be able to get help is, sure, but it shouldn't be that I have to go to the administrator. The administrator should not be able to help me by virtue of privileged position. The administrator should be able to help me by virtue of my having said, I'd like to give the administrator access to this session so they can look at what's going on. And for the administrator, I should be able to substitute, I'd like to give Scott access to this session to see what's going on. This is not a function, in my mind, of administrator privilege. It's a function of user-granted permission. We don't have to give up privacy in the architecture. We do. We don't have to. And if I were running a switching system, if I were running a leased service, right, there's something called a common carrier defense. The reason that when he plans to murder you, you can't sue the phone company for conspiring in your murder. The phone company's position is, we do not monitor the conversations on the net, we have no responsibility for the bits that traverse our wires, and the legal basis for that absence of responsibility is that they do not and cannot lack the technical means to generally monitor conversations. Now, in the same sense, we can architect a system in which the administrator can lease a leased host, and cannot evaluate what you're doing on the host. And this is definitely a two-edged thing, right? But if you were in the leased hosting business, right, you'd want to be able to engage in something comparable to the common carrier defense. Because here's the deal, right? The minute you there's a very funny line, which is the minute you step over this line, you become legally liable. If you step over the line and you reach into a user account and you alter what they are doing, what you've done is legally established that you have technical means to do that and to monitor, and you're now legally liable for the consequences if you fail to do that. This is a very expensive line. Very strange situation. And this is why we have policies where people say, if you sign up on the system, you agree to the following code of behavior, and if you don't observe this code of behavior, I'm going to whack your account in your history. None of this has anything to do with what I was going to do. And let me just foreshadow tomorrow. We've got 5 minutes and we'll get to your question. What I came in planning to do today was to talk about some issues in consistency, and in particular, this funny thing about transactions. One of the features that's conspicuously missing in POSIX is a mechanism for transacting a series of system calls. It just wasn't in the design space. This is not an indictment of POSIX. It's just not in the feature set. It would be exceptionally hard to add it to the feature set, because what I really want to do is I really want to start a transaction, do a couple of operations that might be nominally unrelated, right, and then commit them collectively or fail to commit them collectively. Example, when I'm adding a new user, I want to make sure that either password and shadow both get updated, or neither gets updated, but please pick one. Actually, it's password, shadow, group, and group minus, but the minute I have more than one, right, I've stepped outside of any atomicity guarantee that Unix can give me. In fact, even if I'm just manipulating the one, already I have some conditions in the file system where I could fail in such a way that I would lose the password file altogether. You're raising your eyebrow here. The unit of protection in the file system is the file. Right? If you manage to write the wrong block in the wrong place, and the file system consistency checker concludes that the file is garbage, one of its options is to remove the file. If that file happens to be password, you're in deep doo-doo. And in fact, I believe in later versions of login, there's actually a check for that case. Because it happened. I've seen it happen. Okay? In fact, When I was at Bell Labs very early in my career, when RFS was still a running concern, we were in the habit that we would cross mount each other's systems. We would cross mount slash from each other's systems, right? So I had in my file system slash mount slash whatever it was that Laura's machine was, okay, and a couple of other machines. Well, we also had an expression unrelated to the first part called fat fingering, right? This is what happens when you're sitting at the root prompt and without remembering that you're sitting at the root prompt, you type a command quickly and hit return before your brain gets in gear. Every system administrator learns this lesson the hard way at least three times. And sure enough, I happened to be sitting at the root prompt. I had just SU minus. I had ended up in slash. And the command that I typed was rm-rf star. Now, the good news or the bad news, depending on your point of view, was that at that time, when you did this operation, rm proceeded in the order of entry in the directories. Okay? So the first thing I lost was slash lost and found. The second thing I lost was slash boot, which on that particular generation of machines contained bootable microcode, which was a little bit awkward to recover. Unfortunately, I had moved around a couple of files in my slash directory, so the next entry was slash mount. And the first entry in slash mount was Laura's machine, and we got most of the way through her file system before I caught my mistake. Laura was more than minimally displeased. What was the point of all that? There are a lot of ways to go wrong putting the wrong things in the file system, I think is the first point. And it's not obvious that I should be able to do that. And if you accept, and there's an argument, that if you buy that the quality demographics of administrators is basically the same as the quality demographics of anything else in the world, that is, the majority of them are roughly average because life has a lot of bell curves. Right? There are a lot of policy decisions that you don't want administrators messing with. A few very good ones can deal with those policy issues. The vast majority of them only think they can. Second observation, all programmers believe they're in the top 2%. Now, the interaction of these two statements is not a pretty thing that bears thinking about. You had a question, sort of, involved.
Yeah. I didn't understand one thing about merging the constructor with the space bank.
No, we're not merging the constructor with the space bank. We're putting the function of the process creator in the space bank.
Right, that's what I mean. So now there's a space bank, what is the brand name of this one?
Yes.
So the space bank can create only one particular process from a particular program?
Yeah, so in fact, I was thinking about that as I was describing the change, and I want to go back and look at it again. It may make more sense to merge it with a constructor, and I think Charlie and I have to look at that again. The protocol here would be that I would go to the fabricating bank. I would hand it the bank that the storage should come from. The brand would be determined by the fabricating bank, which would be unique to the constructor. The storage would come from the allocating bank. The reason this is actually kind of okay is it turns out all the banks are implemented by the same process, so this isn't as expensive as it sounds. But there is something unclean about that interaction that Charlie and I need to look at again. Okay. We'll pick up tomorrow and talk about consistency stuff.